Hi, I'm James Dickey, Senior Counsel for the Upper Midwest Law Center, Minnesota's nonprofit public interest law firm that fights for liberty and the rule of law. Welcome back to Minnesota Law Weekly, where we update you on important developments on legal issues in Minnesota and how we at UMLC are your voice fighting for you in the courts. I'm coming to you today for the second part of our two-part episode from the Capitol in St. Paul. Today, I am joined by True North Legal and Minnesota Family Counsel's Renee Carlson. Renee, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, James. Good to be here with you today.
Well, Renee, last week on Minnesota Law Weekly, as the first part of our two-part episode, I talked about the Minnesota Supreme Court decision. I talked about some different legislative actions that we believe are illegal or unconstitutional, and that we do intend to take action in the courts against mm-hmm. those bills that have now become law. Mm-hmm. But speaking of bills becoming law, you did a lot of work on behalf of True North Legal and Minnesota Family Counsel educating legislators throughout the last session. So tell us a little bit about True North Legal, a little bit about Minnesota Family Counsel, and then I'd love to hear more, and I'm sure the folks in our audience would love to hear more, about the work that you do at the Capitol behind the scenes and in educating people as the bills are being made.
Right. Well, True North Legal is a legal initiative of the Minnesota Family Institute, which is part of the Minnesota Family Council, and we work on issues relating to life, family, and religious freedom. And the unique thing about True North Legal is that we work in education, policy, and litigation. So we call it like kind of a three-legged stool. So we spend quite a bit of time at the Capitol.
So, Renee, you mentioned that you are in the Capitol. You are part of that three-legged stool. You're educating legislators. So tell me in the audience what that means.
Yeah, well, I work with our Director of Public Policy of the Minnesota Family Council. Spend a lot of time at the Capitol meeting with legislators and helping them understand what bills mean, what happens if they pass, if there's any legal implications, if there's any case law that's adverse to some of the laws that we saw that were passed even this year. And I also testify myself and help represent the citizens of Minnesota and voice our concerns with respect to the legislation that is consistent with the mission of Minnesota Family Council, which is, again, life, family, and religious freedom.
Let's go down that road a little bit. So one of the things that I think is frustrating for a lot of people in Minnesota is not really getting or seeing how everything is done, because, you know, a bill comes up and there's a news story about it, and then there's some changes, and hey, the changes get undone, and then things go back to the way they were, and all the bad stuff that was out comes back in, and how the sausage gets made. So, you know, talk a little bit about, give us an example of a law that is now, or a bill that has become law that you testified about, mm-hmm. or go ahead and tell us some of that.
Sure. Well, last time I was on the show, we talked a lot about the life legislation and what was happening with respect to House File 1, Senate File 1, House File 91, and Senate File 70. That was the abortion legislation and abortion regulations. So as many of your listeners probably know, Senate File 1 and House File 1 passed, which was the fundamental right to abortion, also being called the PRO Act, where a lot of confusion came in and questions were with respect to the how-to bills, which sought to eliminate and repeal and remove all regulations and protections, common sense health and safety regulations and protections related to abortion. And unfortunately, those got put into the Health and Human Services omnibus bill, and most of those provisions in Minnesota have now been repealed. And what are those provisions? I'm sure you're probably asking, and you might be wondering yourself.
That was my next question, so go ahead.
Well, the informed consent provision, which simply informs women or girls who are getting an abortion about what happens to their body, what they might expect, that's now gone. Physicians are no longer required to provide that. A 24-hour waiting period, which simply mandates that people wait 24 hours, that they really have an opportunity to think about what they're doing, what kind of procedure they're going to be having, and that 24-hour waiting period is gone. Also, a lot of the reporting requirements are now gone, despite what some of the representatives have said.
Well, and that's interesting, because at the same time the legislature was repealing those reporting requirements, the legislature also created what I would call a wrong think database, or hate speech database, where suddenly we're going to be, the Department of Human Rights mm-hmm. is going to be capturing all these statements by people that some individual in their own subjective belief says, oh, I think that's, you know, biased, or I think that's bigoted in some
the
way, shape,
registry.
Or form. The hate registry. Mm-hmm. And so the legislature passed that thinking there's no problem with any kind of reporting on your neighbors. You can go ahead and turn in your neighbors to the speech police. but apparently you can't require an abortion clinic to provide information about why they're occurring. Mm-hmm.
And these are just really common sense health and safety regulations, and they do keep abortionists accountable. And the other thing that we've lost is the physician-only law and hospital requirements, where only physicians would perform an abortion. And you would think that the legislature would want to make sure that, again, any woman getting an abortion is taken care of by a physician who has expertise. So if someone is hemorrhaging or has a serious medical condition, that that person is cared for by someone who has the utmost credentials. But that is no longer there, as well as the hospital only requirement for getting an abortion after a certain point in the pregnancy. We also lost the money that goes to pregnancy resource centers,
right,
the positive alternatives grant. I mean, and I just think that there's a lot of hypocrisy here that happened at the legislature, because this is taking away money from women and young children and even men who need services, and now they will no longer receive that because that state grant is gone. There's about probably 27 pregnancy resource centers that receive that money out of about 30 that applied. Overall in the state, there's about 80 pregnancy resource centers, but it is really incredible that the legislature would find that it is appropriate to remove that aid from vulnerable women and children in our state.
And meanwhile, the legislature at the exact same time is giving direct grants to different groups around the state. And you can imagine from the makeup of the trifecta in the legislature what those groups look like, and they certainly are not pregnancy resource centers.
That's right. And so what does it mean to be helping women and helping children? Is it based on some government ideology? It's just astounding that they remove this grant. And so I'd say to anybody watching, if you do have a heart for women and children in need, then take a look at your local pregnancy resource centers, because in Minnesota, they are going to need our help now more than ever before.
So after the PRO Act was passed and after the how-to bill was mostly passed, is there anything that remains of our formerly common sense bipartisan abortion regulations in the state?
Well, thankfully, we still have the parental notification law, which requires parents be notified if their child is going to get an abortion, although there's still judicial bypass, so a minor could get an abortion by the stroke of a pen if a judge decides that it's in that minor's best interest. However, the parental notification law was still on the books. But there was, as you may know, a lawsuit, the Doe v. Minnesota case, that found that a district court found that the parental notification law was unconstitutional. So we'll have to see what happens as that case progresses. In fact, there is a group of moms, an association called Moms, Mothers Offering Maternal Support, who is trying to intervene in that lawsuit because the Attorney General has not adequately defended parental rights in that case. So we'll just have to watch that up through the Court of Appeals and see what happens. But thankfully, the legislature did not remove the parental notification law.
Yeah, you know, it's incredible to me that the Attorney General just basically gave up on defending things like the parental notification law in court, even though they're most quite obviously constitutional. Especially in light of the Dobbs decision last year. So,
And in the Doe v. Minnesota case, there was 12 times where the judge himself, in his opinion, said unrebutted evidence. Again, that just shows that the Attorney General did not provide an adequate defense for parents, especially with respect to the parental notification provisions.
And it's my understanding as well that even though the Attorney General said, I'm not going to do anything more to defend this law, the Attorney General's office actively opposed the request to intervene.
Correct.
And that's just unbelievable to me that you're admitting essentially that there isn't any adequate defense, but you're still opposing someone else stepping up and doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Crazy. One of the things that I'm also aware of that went through the legislature was actually a ban on certain types of professional speech.
Right.
Now, from the First Amendment perspective, banning a category of speech based on its content is extremely problematic. Mm-hmm. But maybe you could tell the audience a little bit more about this particular counseling ban that's now in effect.
That's right. It's the so-called conversion therapy bill, which is actually better named the counseling ban. So this prohibits minors and even vulnerable adults from getting counseling. It prohibits them from attaining their self-selected counseling goals. And so licensed professionals cannot help somebody with unwanted same-sex attraction, but they can help somebody who wants to move in the other direction,
right,
who says that they're gender fluid and they want to embrace that. That's okay, but it's not okay to help somebody who wants to, again, get help for unwanted same-sex attraction. And you nailed it, James. That's viewpoint discrimination.
Right.
That's unconstitutional. And the Supreme Court itself even signaled that those types of laws would be found unconstitutional in the NIFLA case. We also know that there's a case out of the 11th Circuit, the Otto case, Otto v. Boca Raton, that struck down a law that was even narrower than the one that Minnesota passed. So if there are any counselors who are watching, please get in touch with us at True North Legal. We are interested in talking to you and talking about how this law may impact you.
Yeah, and that's really important too. I mean, one of the things that is incredibly frustrating, like I said, is that this is it is viewpoint discrimination. Mm-hmm. It is one-sided entirely, and it's really based on this kind of progressive prevailing idea about what is acceptable to teach people and what's not, mm-hmm. and it's enforced from top down from the government mm-hmm. on the people, even those who may want to seek that kind of counseling. Mm-hmm. So you basically have deprived them of the opportunity if that is what they want to choose.
That's right.
And there's really no difference if they were to be wanting to choose to go the other way.
That's right.
So in addition to the counseling ban that you just mentioned, the legislature made a lot of other controversial moves related to gender.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple different bills that specifically targeted gender issues. One of them was, as I've heard it described, the kidnapping bill.
Right.
And one was an actual change to the definition of sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So could you talk about those a little bit?
Right. So the kidnapping bill, we refer to it as a kidnapping bill because it really hijacks children from their parents and violates parental rights and also harms kids. So that was the so-called gender-affirming care bill, where the legislature said that all children have a right to receive so-called gender-affirming care. That means surgeries, that means cross-sex hormones, that is experimental medicine on children. I mean, then there's a real question of consent in that as well, and whether that is in the best interest of the children. Unfortunately, through this law, it's a very complex law that passed, leverage the family law system. So this is a system that has a goal to reunify kids with their parents, not to split them apart. And that's exactly what this law intends to do. It actually adds to the categories of abuse and neglect in the statutes. So any parent that does not provide this so-called gender-affirming care can be found to have abused or neglected their child. You might say, okay, well, why is that a problem? Because in our family law system, any child who is abused or neglected is removed from their home, and rightly so, because we want to prevent them from being abused or neglected. But is not providing so-called gender-affirming care, again, this experimental medicine, really warranting category of abuse and neglect across the state lines, too.
Right, right. So, I mean, to me, from even from just a pure government powers perspective, one of the things about our republic that has been so enduring and so important has been the respect between states for
right.
the decisions of courts of another state.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, there have been some humorous statements about the full faith and credit clause
right.
on the Senate floor.
I guess, I mean, I'm not a constitutional judge or lawyer. My understanding is probably not. That's my guess, Mr. President.
Obviously, that has serious constitutional concerns. Before we should vote on any kind of bill or an amendment that has not been through committee and properly vetted and has constitutional concerns, I don't think we should be eager to jump on that.
But what's interesting is that I think Governor Wallace himself, after he signed the executive order that essentially mirrors what this, mm-hmm. this law says, said that he would not honor an extradition request mm-hmm. by another state mm-hmm. if someone literally kidnaps mm-hmm. their own child because they don't have legal custody mm-hmm. of the child mm-hmm. and takes that child to Minnesota, that he would not honor a request for extradition from another governor.
That's right.
That to me is just, I mean, that it's astounding. It's a total abuse of the power of a sovereign state as
That's
it relates
right.
to another state.
That's right.
I mean, we wouldn't want that happening where, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis or Governor Greg Abbott were to say, like, we're not going to honor Minnesota's extradition
that's
requests.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's exactly what seems like it's going to happen.
Yeah. That is exactly what it seems like we're doing. And on top of that, as I was saying, when this child is taken in, when the court has jurisdiction over that child, it was the idea of temporary jurisdiction
right.
was something that was debated. But temporary jurisdiction can be as long as 18 months. We've talked with a lot of family law attorneys. We've researched this, so we know that temporary jurisdiction is intended to remain so that the abuse and neglect is resolved.
Right.
How do you resolve the abuse and neglect of not providing gender-affirming care?
Right.
What's the middle ground?
Right. It
so
seems like a permanent
happens.
Thing no matter what you do.
Exactly. It seems like we're headed down that road.
And once you've made that decision, if a non-custodial parent takes a kid into Minnesota and makes that decision, it doesn't seem like, in many cases, there's any way going back.
Right.
That's a huge problem.
Right. And a really significant violation of parental rights, and really concerning that is what the legislature thinks is in the best interest of children and their guardians.
Right. And along the same lines, speaking of the best interest of children, There was also a change to the definition of sexual orientation in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that received quite a lot of media attention. Some people are calling this the pedophilia bill. So essentially, the Minnesota Human Rights Act defines categories of anti-discrimination. One of those is sexual orientation. And within that provision, the sexual orientation definition said this does not include sexual or physical attachment to children. But the House decided to remove that language, and so they struck that language. Interestingly, that was brought up on a House floor session, and they put that language back with a 126-0 vote. So everybody decided, for whatever reason, that the intent was not to remove that language, that it would be problematic if we remove that language, and that people could interpret that to mean many other things. Perhaps we don't protect children. Essentially, in the judiciary omnibus bill, that language was taken out. Now we no longer have that.
And that came about as part of the conference committee, right?
Correct.
Now the conference committee is where you get a disagreement on two bills that were passed, and then the House and the Senate nominate people to go into conference and then figure out which bill is going to come out of this.
That's right.
And in my understanding is that there were zero Republicans involved in that committee.
That's my understanding as well.
Okay. So just want to be clear that this was a situation where the House had an amendment that took away this change that removed language that identified adults being attracted to children as not a protected class. Mm-hmm. So the amendment put that language back in, and then they went into conference committee and then took that
took the language out again. And then continued to defend why it was the best thing to do and in the best interest of all Minnesotans. In fact, they said it stigmatizes the LGBTQ community. But I think the real question is what is our interest in protecting children?
Right. I mean, it seems like it has nothing to do with that. It has to do specifically with attraction of adults to children and keeping those individuals away from being protected by the courts in the case of an anti-discrimination lawsuit.
And that's what was discussed on the House floor, and that's why it was decided the amendment was adopted, again, 126-0, to take it out of the definition and make it its own provision so that there was clarity and there was no confusion or stigmatizing of anybody, that it was its own standalone provision. And yet, that did not remain the judiciary omnibus bill. That should be concerning to all people. It doesn't matter what you think about gender ideology. You should just be concerned that the state legislature removed protections for children.
Well, a lot of change coming out of the Minnesota legislature as it relates to gender policy. And we'll have to see how it's going to impact us as a state going forward. Well, Renee, thank you so much again for coming on to the program this week. It's always great to have you on Minnesota Law Weekly. We really appreciate you and True North Legal lending your legal expertise to us.
Well, thanks, James. Good to be here.
We'll be sure to have you back again soon. And that's it for Minnesota Law Weekly. The Upper Midwest Law Center remains your only backstop against this radical left agenda in Minnesota. We are working hard to bring lawsuits that are going to stop this radical left agenda in the courts. As we talked about on the last episode, we've got several lawsuits lined up. And now also, you can donate to us at umlc.org. You can send us a check to 8421 Wayzata Boulevard, Suite 300, Golden Valley, Minnesota. You can also donate to True North Legal and Renee's organization by going to truenorthlegal.org and making a donation there. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.